It is Tuesday, October 13th. Welcome to Menace to Sports, episode 123. So much to unpack today. I mean, just Florida going down, losing, Alabama looking like a Big 12 defense. So many things happened on Saturday that we need to unpack, analyze, and look at, and I am here for it. Really juiced up for this episode. Also, before we get started, if you didn't check out social media, the Ace on Lane is popping. Tickets are for sale on our website, menacetosports.com. What it's going to be is a watch party. It's going to be COVID-friendly, social distance, taking temperatures, everything we need to do to be compliant and not get shut down. But then Braxton Miller and I are hosting a watch party. It's right next to Varsity Club. If you want to have a game day experience, it's going to be all you can eat with some awesome, awesome food, all you can drink with everything from Buckeye vodka. We have whiskey. We're going to have Screwball is going to partner with us. If you're into that peanut butter whiskey, we're going to actually make a special signature drink for the event. And so many other things are going to come into it. We're looking at a bourbon bar in the VIP area, cigar bar, all kinds of stuff that we're looking at doing. So anyways, check it out. MenaceToSports.com. Braxton and I will be there, probably with a bunch of other people, looking at doing a pregame analysis show also. Let's go. Let's experience the Buckeye game together the right way on campus, but be safe about it. So check it out. The Ace on Lane on the website, Menace to Sports. Definitely want to plug that because it's going to be awesome. And we have limited tickets for sale because of the COVID social distancing. We can't have 500 people. We got to limit it. So check it out. Come hang out with us. Really would love to see you and hang out. Also, if you're interested, we have our gambling advice. We were up, I think, 275 bucks if you bet $5 a unit, whatever that equates to. Our gambling pick'em, our handicapping and advice platform is patreon.com/menacetopicks or at menacetopicks on Twitter. We give out free plays on Twitter, so at least go follow on Twitter to get your free plays. But we had a big time NFL Sunday. Really, really excited about it and excited how this week's going to go. I know we have some plays tonight with the Major League Baseball playoffs and now the Tuesday night football, which is bizarre. But before we get into the show, I'm sorry, check it out. We're hitting it like over a 60% clip right now, which is phenomenal. And of course, as we always do, I'm going to let you hear from one of our sponsors so you can go get some free money to gamble, use our picks, use their money, and win. Simple as that. So here's my bookie with a little incentive to go check out their site and check out their services. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know the NFL is back and the NBA playoffs are in full swing, which can only mean one thing. It's winning season at my bookie. I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting my money on it. Sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team. Regardless, whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. With the biggest online selection of bets and props, they've made it simple to win and easy to withdraw your cash. Right now, they've got a $100,000 super contest for only a $10 entry, and they're giving away $5,000 in cash prizes every 4 weeks. You would be crazy not to invest in your sports knowledge with that kind of potential return on your investment. $10 to win thousands? Sign me up. Shoot. You too can sign up at MyBookie, and if you use the promo code MENACE to claim your 100% deposit match all the way up to $1,000, that means you put $100 in and they give you another $100. It's an easy way to jumpstart your bankroll. NFL, NBA, and MLB. They've got it all on tap and it's never too late to get started on your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. All right, there you have it. Free money, free picks, go win money. That's what you got to do. Go to MyBookie.com use the promo code MENACE and you'll have free money. So I want to talk about, before we even get to the show, I do want to talk about Dwayne Haskins, what is going on in Washington. And I just want to talk about the behind the scenes. I've had long conversations with, 20 different NFL players that either played for me or played for teams that I coached on. And, you know, just that were, I would call them friends. I don't know what you call them once they move on and they're adults. They're friends, right? Guys like Darren Lee, guys like Michael Thomas, guys like Braxton Miller, guys like Philly Brown. I've had so many conversations about the NFL. And what is going on to Dwayne Haskins is so typical NFL operation, right? I'm not here to talk about what he did. If he bragged about his stats after a loss or maybe wasn't engaged enough. The kid was playing pretty well. I wouldn't say he's playing great, but he also has the most atrocious offensive line and offense in America. He has Terry McLaurin. That's about it. And he has a rookie running back that shows promise in Antonio Gibson. But here's the thing. In the NFL, it is solely about, you know, your own livelihood. That's what it's always about, especially coaches, GMs. Think about this now. If a GM drafts a player in the first round, right? If a coach drafts a player in the first round, they have such a vested interest in that kid being a great player and playing, because if they don't, if they bench him or cut him, they look like idiots for making the decision to draft him, or a big free agent. Either way, it happens all the time. So what happened to Braxton? Braxton goes to the Browns, and he's clearly one of their better receivers, but he gets cut because they had signed other receivers that were more high profile. They maybe drafted a guy that they needed to not cut because they would have looked like idiots. So then a guy's career gets derailed. That's what's happening in Washington right now. Dwayne Haskins is not the guy they think can be the next Patrick Mahomes. Fine. I mean, that's a high bar. And I'm not saying he can't be, but they don't think he can be. So they're moving on. And they, so much so that they made the kid the third string quarterback. They're trying to run him out of Dodge. They're trying to run him out of town. They want to get rid of him, get rid of that contract, get rid of him entirely, and bring in their own guy. That's simply what they're trying to do. And it's unfortunate because, in my opinion, they should have played out the season with him, tried to give him as much success he could have, and then trade him. Someone might actually want him then. Now Dwayne's going to be viewed as this unwanted person that maybe had issues in the locker room, which I know him is not the case. So just a complete clown show in Washington. I wanted to touch on that because I had a couple people ask me my thoughts about what's going on. That is the NFL. It is so political and so ridiculous that great players get, or not even great, not great players always, but the more talented player does not always make the roster and is on the team. There's so much more politically behind it. Reputations and jobs are at stake for certain guys to make the roster, to be a starter, and owners get pissed when guys that are making a lot of money are not getting the ball as much as guys that are making less money because they're asking, why do I pay it for them? It's a nightmare. Anytime you get money involved, it's a nightmare. So that's what's going on. I wanted to address that before the show starts because the rest of the show is going to be insane college football analytics, analyzation, just talking about this landscape of college football. So enough about Haskins, enough about the non-football league, the NFL. Let's get to the show.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
Welcome to episode 123, Menace of Sports. I am Zach Smith. First things first. Coolest thing I saw this weekend that was not a college football game is Ohio State has announced a new tradition. The number zero jersey is now being called the Block O jersey, which, first of all, is creative as shit on Ryan Day's part. So cool. And it's and even further than that, it's going to honor Bill Willis, who was the first African-American in the NFL, I believe. Don't quote me on that. That's what I remember. But he was a great player at Ohio State. It's going to honor him. And Jonathan Cooper is the first player to wear the Block O jersey. So not a more deserving person or player to wear that jersey just because of who he is, the character he has. I mean, it was a home run decision and awesome of Ryan Day to do. I think it's going to be really cool to watch that develop. And 100 years from now, some kid's going to get the Block O jersey having no idea that Ryan Day started that. Ryan Day started that when they allowed the number zero, and that Jonathan Cooper was the first recipient of the Block O jersey, the first player in the history of Ohio State football to wear the number zero, to wear the Block O number. Crazy. So cool. But anyways, what a weekend of college football. First, I'm going to start with my players of the week. And I only picked four this week because I really didn't see anyone that was, I don't know, outstanding. I could have picked Trevor Lawrence as the quarterback, but what would that do? I mean, I think he played well. He didn't play ridiculous. But the guys that I think played ridiculous, the first one is Alabama's running back Najee Harris. My goodness, he's just ridiculous. 206 yards, 9 yards per carry, and 5 touchdowns. He created, you know how I feel about missed tackles, right? A defense in its entirety should have no more than 9, right? No double-digit missed tackles. Najee Harris created 15 alone. He had six 10-plus runs. He was ridiculous. He's one of the, I think it's, right now it's him and Travis Etienne as the best two backs in the country. I don't see anyone that's really even close. We'll wait and see how maybe a Trey Sermon does. But right now they're the two that are out in front of everyone. And then my wide receiver of the week. I'm not sure if he listened to the show last week and I pissed him off because he led the country in drops, but LSU's Terrace Marshall Jr. was a monster on Saturday. I know they lost, and we'll get to that in a minute, but 11 catches, 235 yards, 3 touchdowns. He himself had 10 first downs, 90 yards run after the catch, 0 drops. Hats off to Terrace Marshall. I will tell you when a kid or a player was not very good, but I'm gonna champion them when they were good, and he was better than good. He was phenomenal. The other guy that was phenomenal, the tight end of the week for me, is Ole Miss tight end Kenny Yeboah. 7 for 7 on targets for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns. We will talk about how he did that to the Nick Saban Bama defense, but he was dominant. I mean, just every time you looked, that kid was making a play. It was either him or Elijah Moore every other play in the run game too. It was phenomenal. The other guy I want to point out, the only defensive player of the week I have this week, is Oklahoma's Jaden Davis. Partly because he's from South Florida, and everyone knows my feeling on South Florida athletes, but he was a stud against Texas. He allowed 3 catches in total on 11 targets for 14 total yards, a 73% grade, and he only had 1 tackle. People probably are sitting there saying, why would that make him player of the week? He only had 1 tackle. I love it when corners don't have tackles. You know why? That means their guys aren't getting open, and they aren't catching the ball, so they don't have to tackle him. He was outstanding. So Jaden Davis is my player of the week. Now, my only not player of the week is Florida's corner Marco Wilson. Had a rough day. A rough day for the old Gators against A&M, and Marco was part of the reason. He was 7 for 7 targets, 132 yards, 2 touchdowns in their loss to A&M. He gave up, every time you turn on, or if you watch the highlights, you don't have to watch the game. Watch the highlights. He's in almost every passing touchdown clip. It was not a good day for Marco. So that's our individual segment. Now let's talk about some of these games. The first one that we're going to stop talking about them eventually because, man, the fall from the stratosphere they were in after last season to where they are today, the LSU Tigers. Wow. And I'm not going to talk about the whole game. I'm going to talk about one thing. First of all, Ja'Marr Chase opted out for a reason. There's a reason he opted out. He saw this coming. He was at practice every day. He went through two-a-days and opted out at the end. He knew this was about to be ugly. Here's what you're seeing that validates that. 44 seconds left in the fourth quarter. LSU's down 45-41. They have first and goal from inside the one-yard line. Louisiana State University against Missouri. Missouri has 9 people in the box. There's 2 for 2 on the perimeter, 9 people in this box. And the dumbasses at LSU on the offensive side of the ball ran 2 straight inside zone plays with 7 blockers. You do the math. You have 9 guys in the box, 7 blockers, you're short 1. Matter of fact, if you use the quarterback to run or at least do a zone read where he's reading someone to eliminate one, the defense is still +1. They have an extra guy. And LSU, the most shocking part of it was they didn't even block all the first level defenders. It's one thing if you say we're on the 1, that linebacker's free. The running back has to run through contact and get 1 yard. I can buy that. They left edge players free that hit LSU in the backfield twice in a row. And then 22 seconds left with no timeouts, they call 2 plays at the... Here's what you do. So that happens, right? They get stopped on 2 straight plays. They call a timeout. Here's what you do. right? You call two plays at the timeout. You run it on third down, throw it on fourth if you have to. You're on the half yard line. They didn't do that. They didn't. They knew. They thought they had to throw it to stop the clock because there's no timeouts, 22 seconds. They didn't want to run it and not get a fourth down playoff. So you just call two plays. It's simple as that. They didn't do that. Or how about this? Just quarterback sneak it four times in a row. I mean, what are we talking about? Let's say it was 3 feet. Four times quarterback sneak. You need to get, what is that, 36 inches? You got to get like 9 inches every time you sneak it to score in four plays. That's ridiculous. That should not be impossible for LSU. But anyways, third down, they ran a bullshit quick arrow to the tight end into an unblocked D end, and he just comes up the field and bats the ball down. Unbelievable. And so then, fourth down Tigers, the defending national champs against Mizzou. What do? They run a rollout. So now half the field is an option. On fourth down, you only have half the field option. You only have two receivers over there, so you have two options to throw as you roll to half the field, and the entire defense is pursuing to flood the part of the field that you can throw to. When it first started, I thought it was going to be a rollout, pull up, and throw back to the tight end. Some kind of trick play or deceptive play to score to win the game. Nope. They rolled out, threw a little flat route. It got batted away. LSU is now 1-2. Unbelievable. Derek Stingley Jr. is the one I feel bad for. He led, and this secondary is putrid. He led DBU and Mizzou. Mizzou was a perfect 6-for-6 on targets on Derek Stingley Jr. for 60 yards and 3 first downs. So all that talk last year, we can hush down a little bit. This kid is not what everyone thought he was going to be already. He will be. He's very talented, but for Missouri to go 6-for-6 on targets and convert 3 first downs on what's supposed to be the best corner in the country, that's, I don't know about that. I got questions. But how about Bo Pelini's return to the Bayou? LSU starts 1-2 for the first time since 1994 on Curly Hallman's 4-7 Tiger squad. Curly Hallman, bet you don't know who that is. That's the last coach to go 1-2 in the first three games. Now Les Miles. Curly Hallman was 39-39. In his career. There's a little stat for you. We learned about Curly. So the Tigers are, I don't know, just in disarray. It's major problems in the Bayou. But the other team that is not looking like the usual team that we see is Nick Saban's Alabama Crimson Tide. That game against Ole Miss was wow. And I sat there, I watched it, the whole thing. And then I studied it on Sunday. And the whole time I kept saying, what conference am I watching? Is this the Big 12? 1,370 yards of offense. Both teams, listen to this now, both teams had 21 missed tackles. There's no wonder why it ended up being 63-48. Here's all I do know. I want to talk about what Lane Kiffin did to Alabama. All right, the first thing I'm going to start with, the stud pillars on the outside that Alabama has, and Patrick Surtain the second and Josh Jobe were outstanding. And they are outstanding. They're two elite corners. Each of them gave up one catch for 11 yards. And it was very clear after watching the film, Lane Kiffin's plan was to ignore the outside receivers. Don't even try to throw on those corners because he doesn't have the receivers and those kids are phenomenal. So he worked the core of Nick Saban's defense, the middle of the field, the linebackers, the safeties. Elijah Moore and their tight end I talked about, Kenny Yeboah, took that job and ran with it. They were 11-for-11 on targets. All of those targets were in the middle of the field for 143 yards for Moore and 7-of-7 targets for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns for Yeboah, like I talked about. Lane Kiffin had a formula, the formula to beat Nick Saban, and it is no secret now. It was a secret formula. Now it's out and about. You got to tempo the shit out of them. Make their defense exhausted. Run it straight down their throat. And what he did formationally, he fucked with them up and motioned. And, you know, he did a great job of having a good plan with formations and motions, but he got them so tired. And what happens is you get a defense so tired, and then you motion a guy or trade a guy or shift a guy or line up in an unconventional formation. They're already exhausted. Now they have to think about where they line up and what their job is. So much going on. And he did it. He just was at their neck. And the other thing he did, like I said, he kept the game in the middle of the field. The quarterback for Ole Miss, Matt Corral, attempted 3 passes outside the hashes. 3 in the whole game. He was also only blitzed 9 times on passing plays. Why did that happen? because of tempo. They're just trying to get lined up and play defense against that tempo. They don't have time to get lined up, time up a blitz, and change all their roles. That tempo is the talent equalizer. Lane Kiffin knew it, and he executed it to perfection. Almost. They almost won. They had no business being in that game. Matt Corral was 5 for 6 throwing against the blitz because it was so late. It was they couldn't disguise it. Tempo exposed everything. Because tempo offenses, here's what they do. They create easy throws. They minimize blitzes, and they equate talent because the defense is gassed. And all they're worried about is getting lined up. Just get lined up so they're not out of position and get creased, which that happened too. Ole Miss ran almost 90 plays. That is not what Nick Saban wants for his defense. I promise you that. They only got pressure on Matt Corral 3 times total because of tempo. Ole Miss got pressure 17 times on Mac Jones. The other thing they did a great job of in tempo is giving Matt Corral great run action throws. 24 play action passes versus 14 drop back. He was 80% completion on play action pass, and both of his touchdowns were on play action because defenses are so gassed. They're worried about getting lined up, and then you show a run action at them and the run has been hurting you. Everyone's biting, and it's easy throws. Ole Miss was 9 for 17 on third down, 4 for 4 on fourth down, 647 yards. Lane Kiffin deserves the coach of the year just for that game. Unbelievable. The other thing that happened in the game that is going to be detrimental because if you don't know, Alabama plays Georgia this weekend in what will probably be the absolute, well, it probably will be a preview for the SEC championship game. The way Florida plays on defense, these two teams might have to play again. Probably will have to play again. But Jordan Battle, the starting safety for Alabama, who's a really good player, got ejected basically by cancel culture, a nonsense targeting call in the second half. So now he won't play the whole first half against Georgia. So keep that in mind. Alabama on offense, Mac Jones continues to be outstanding. He only had 4 incompletions. Think about that. 28 of 32, 417 yards, 2 touchdowns, 12 of 13 for 219 and 2 touchdowns versus the blitz. 12 of 13 versus blitz. Wow. This kid, I'm telling you, he is having a Joe Burrow-esque year. We need these other teams to start playing to start have some Heisman race conversation because this kid is lights out. Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle were absolutely dominant. What the most shocking thing was Alabama only had 7 third downs. So Ole Miss only got Alabama to third down 7 times. You know what they did? They converted 6 of them. Just crazy. So Lane Kiffin gave the formula out, and I would be interested and excited to see all these other teams try to use tempo to do the same thing to Alabama until Alabama proves they can stop it. But what a game by the fighting Lane Kiffins and the rebels of Ole Miss. Well, boy, this is going to be a long show. I hope you guys are ready. I hope you guys are buckled up and ready. Like I said, I've mentioned it before. If you don't like the long show, shoot me a message. Or if you do, shoot me a message. I want to keep this content to your liking, but I'm having way too much fun and enjoying watching film and studying this stuff again. I think maybe the COVID quarantine brought it out of me. We still have to talk about the Florida game. We have to talk about the Tennessee-Georgia game. We have to talk about the Oklahoma-Texas game and the game of the week, Miami-Clemson. So this show might be a long one, ladies and gentlemen, and even the public show is going to be a long one. So if you're not signed up, $2.99, patreon.com/menace2sports, the number 2. Make sure you check it out, man. These shows are a lot of data, a lot of content. Let's talk about the Gators. The mighty Dan Mullen is now 6-20 in ranked matchups. He is 6-20 when he plays, when he has a ranked matchup, both teams ranked. Why did Florida lose the game? Well, I'm glad you asked. 18 missed tackles for the Gator defense and 14 for A&M. It is almost 100%. Think about this. Florida only had 8 drives. 8 drives. 7 of the 8 average starting field position was the 23-yard line. So that's worse than a touchback. The one drive they had started on A&M's 37 on a fumble. Everything else started worse than a touchback. But here's the reality. A&M just controlled the clock and dictated the pace of this game. They had almost 20 more offensive plays than Florida and outgained them 543 to 402. A&M dictated the entire game. That's what happened. They had the ball for 35 minutes and Florida had it for 25 minutes. That they did. They held the ball and controlled the game, and Florida's defense couldn't do shit about it. But here's the reality. Florida's offense, Kyle Trask did not play horrible. They scored on their first four drives, and they only had the ball three times in the second half. A&M safety Leon O'Neal Jr. Gave up three touchdowns, four of five targets, and he had a rough day with the two best players on Florida's team, Kadarius Toney and Kyle Pitts. Two for Kadarius Toney, one for Kyle Pitts. Florida put up 400 yards of offense on eight drives. Think about that. This offense is not the problem. Outside of the fact they don't have a run game, outside of the fact they don't have outside receivers, they are finding a way to move the ball. Kyle Trask is excellent. Kadarius Toney's excellent. Kyle Pitts is excellent. They were 7 of 10 on third and fourth down, which is exceptional. Trask still only has two options to throw the ball, though. That's it. KT and Pitts. They had no run game. 3.8 yards per carry, under 100 yards. That's why Florida is not going to be a playoff caliber team this year. They don't have a run game. They don't have outside playmakers, and their defense is suspect. Well, let's talk about their defense. I told your ass this defense was suspect, didn't I? Now, here's I'm going to champion one guy. Kair Elam played great. He's a really good player. He only allowed two catches for 40 yards on five targets. He was really good. Now, his counterpart, we already talked about, Marco Wilson, got scorched. The A&M's receiver, Caleb Chapman, was just absolutely, I don't even know if you can call it eating. He was feasting on Marco. 6 for 6 for 118 yards and two touchdowns. Yikes. But here's a serious question I have for Florida fans out there in the defense. They have this Brenton Cox, who I think is a very talented player. The question is this: when will he actually get home on a pass rush? I mean, again, five quarterback pressures. He's putting pressure on the quarterback, but he hasn't logged a single sack since his one sack he had in week one against Ole Miss. This kid needs to start sacking the quarterback. He needs to get home. But here's what happened. A&M won the game by 100% dictating what was going to happen when they had the ball. 543 yards, 7.3 yards per play, 13 of 16 on third and fourth down, 81%. That might be a damn record. Florida never got him off the field. And then Isaiah Spiller, the running back from A&M, was just, he looked like the best back in the country. That's how bad the defense played. And not to take anything away from him. I mean, 27 carries for 174 yards and two touchdowns, seven runs over 10 yards, and he forced 10 missed tackles himself. That is, whew, that was a rough one for the Florida defense. But here, all of that being said, at the end of the game, it's tied at 38 after Caleb Chapman absolutely cooked Marco one more time. And Florida is driving for the inevitable winning score. You just know it's going to happen. Kyle Trask is going to win that game. And then Malik Davis coughs up the football and hands it back to A&M for them to drive down and win the game. Man, what a costly turnover that was. Because Florida was going to stay alive, and they were going to fight to see another day in the national landscape. Now their only option is to beat Georgia and try to backdoor into the playoffs. That's it. I mean, really, backdoor into the SEC championship game. Because that was a big, big loss for Florida and the SEC. Now, what I saw after the game was one of the most disturbing things. It was Dan Mullen was livid and urged the Swamp to be a sellout. If you didn't hear it, I'm going to play it for you right now. Listen to Dan Mullen. And before you do, before I play it for you, I want you to just think about how big of a whiny baby he is to be bitching about having a big crowd after his defense just got destroyed and embarrassed. But here's Dan Mullen.
It was a great day of football, great atmosphere out there. Crowd was certainly a factor in the game. I will certainly say that. I know our governor passed that rule, so certainly, hopefully, the university administration decides to let us pack the Swamp.
You're saying 90, you want to see 90,000?
Absolutely want to see 90,000 in the Swamp last year. I don't think the section behind our bench, I didn't see an empty seat.
Now, I'm gonna talk about this real quick on two levels. One, I'm excited to see full stadiums, right? I'm with him. I'm excited to see full stadiums, and I'm not here to talk about the coronavirus or any of that nonsense. I'm not, but I'm excited to see full stadiums. But here's the problem. You just got your ass handed to you, and the first thing you want to do is come in and complain that they had a crowd and you guys don't have good crowds and they passed a law and get on your own administration about allowing a packed stadium. Like, what a petulant little baby, a petulant little bitch. Shut the fuck up about the crowd, Dan. There was 24,000 people there. That's less than a spring game. Quit whining like a toddler because your defense got exposed and your guru status can't figure out how to run the damn football. Fucking crybaby. But it's just, I was just talking about it on the Pilot Boys podcast. They interviewed me. And it, like, what do you expect? That's who you hired, right? You hired a guy that's going to complain like a little baby all the time. Because that's just who he is. That's what he does. So It was just, I had to laugh at it because go figure. Here goes Dan popping off about crowds. Like, talk about the missed tackles. Talk about the fact you can't cover anyone. Oh, but major upset for Florida. Huge win for A&M. Really, it was a phenomenal win. And we'll see. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe A&M is a player here and might be able to beat Alabama. Who knows? But now to my favorite game of the weekend. Not the game of the week, but my favorite game of the weekend. The Red River Shootout. Texas versus Oklahoma. Man, so here's what I want to do. I want to talk. I want to just go through my notes, and then we'll analyze the game. First, it's 10-0 in the first quarter. Sam Ellinger scrambles to make it fourth and inches from the one. Tom is going to go for it for the momentum. And then they have a bullshit personal foul to make it fourth and 15 by an O-lineman with a cheap-ass cheap shot in the back at the end of the run. And this happened twice that I saw. It just goes to show the culture under Tom Herman. And I actually was watching the game with Johnny Bullitt from Scarlet and Great. And he said at one point, it looks like Tom Herman's coaching both teams. And I thought I was dying because it did. You're watching. It's like, these are the two worst teams I've ever seen. But it's entertaining. Spencer Rattler also got benched. People won't talk about that because it was like he went off and some trainer was rubbing his arm like he had a sore arm after he threw a pick to a defensive end that dropped out. He got benched, and then they brought him back in because they realized he's still their best option. Unbelievable. But let's just talk about the tale of two quarterbacks here, right? The tale of two quarterbacks. Sam Ellinger, the fourth-year starter. Tom Herman developed Sam Ellinger. He had a 51% passer grade, was 0 for 11 on deep balls with one interception. First of all, the fact that he threw 11 deep balls is pretty cool, but when you connect 0 for 11, you probably got to stop chucking it deep because it ain't working. He was 3 for 17 over 10 yards. What do I tell you? Every show. Great quarterbacks live in that over 10-yard throw area. Now, that's not where they should make all their money, but they have to be successful in that zone. Great quarterbacks actually check it down a lot and take easy completions, but you have to complete balls over 10 yards. You have to if you're a great quarterback. So 3 for 17, 17.6%, had 60 yards passing on those throws. He threw for two touchdowns and two interceptions, but really, he threw for three interceptions. If you don't remember, there was a horrific PI call that negated an interception. So I'm counting it as two touchdowns, three picks. That's Sam Ellinger for you. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Lincoln Riley versus Tom Herman. Who can develop quarterbacks better? Spencer Rattler had a 73% passer grade, 2 for 3 on deep balls, one touchdown, 7 for 11 over 10 yards, 64%, 123 yards passing, three touchdowns and one interception. Spencer Rattler is going to be a great quarterback. Did you hear those stats? He is living where great quarterbacks live right now. Sam Ellinger is not and has never. This was a rookie quarterback versus a fourth-year veteran franchise quarterback, right? This is their guy. I mean, but maybe even a Heisman candidate. And then the lack of offensive guruship didn't run the football. Like, didn't help him at all. It looked like a lot like Ohio State pre-Ryan Day, didn't it? For those of you that watched. 34 rushing attempts by the Longhorns. 23 of them were by Ellinger. 67% of all rushing attempts were by the quarterback, almost 70%. Furthermore, 71 passing plays and 16 designed running plays, 9 with a running back. So if you want to play running back, what is it, Bijan Robinson? I bet he's sick. 9 times out of, what is that, 87 plays? 9 times they handed it to a running back. And so if you split carries, what are you going to have, 4, 5? In a whole game, that's a yikes. This is the offensive identity under Tom Herman in year 4. Think about that. With a supposed Heisman candidate quarterback and 16 returning starters, 27 and 17, Tom Herman. This is his offensive identity. His fourth year, this is supposed to be his program now, right? It's time to part ways with Tommy. It really is. And I'm not saying that because of my own personal disdain for him. This is unfair to Longhorn fans, to Longhorn alumni. Shit, it's unfair to all college football fans. It's unfair to me. I like Texas. I want Texas to be good and relevant. I'd love to see another Vince Young-esque run at a championship. It would be awesome. It's just, it's sad. Now, Oklahoma, on the other hand, they established some sort of run game. TJ Pledger was solid. 22 attempts, 129 yards, 6 yards per carry, 2 touchdowns, 4 runs over 10 yards, 6 avoided tackles. Oklahoma was the better team, obviously. They won, too. But I also wanted to look at who they're throwing to. Who is Texas throwing to? Joshua Moore, the 4-star, top 20 wide receiver, 0 for 4 on deep balls. Jordan Whittington, the 5-star, number 2 receiver in America, 0 for 1 on targets over 10 yards. Brennan Eagles, the 4-star, top 10 receiver in the country, 0 for 3 on deep balls, 1 and 4 over 10 yards. How about Tariq Black, the Michigan transfer, who was supposed to be a big-time player? I mean, he was a 4-star, top 15 receiver in high school, and he would have been higher if he wasn't up in Connecticut. He goes to Michigan, has a decent career, grad transfers to Texas, 1 for 4 over 10 yards. Not one person Sam Ellinger was supposed to throw to had an offensive grade over 65%. I don't know what else you can do if you're the Texas administration. This is the fourth year with an offensive head coach that's supposed to be a guru, and his offense looks like dog shit. And that's being disrespectful to dog shit. I feel bad about the poop that I just compared this offense to. Now, on the other side of the ball, Oklahoma had 5 players over 65% in the pass game for Spencer Rattler. Quite a different story, huh? But look at this. 2018 and 2019, Texas had the number 3 recruiting class in the country. They are now sophomores and juniors. They were the 3rd best group of players in America. What happened? A lack of development, maybe? The staff is horrific at turning those promising, talented players into a great team? The other thing I said, if you don't remember in the preview, is that Lincoln Riley needed to throw it to Marvin Mims. I'm glad he listens to the show. Shout out to Lincoln for being a Patreon or patron on Patreon. I said to throw to Marvin Mims, and damn it, they did. 4 for 4 targets, 52 yards, and a touchdown. They need to throw it to him more, but the sumbitch was 100%. Theo Weiss had a bunch of catches, but averaged 6 yards per catch. 9 catches, only 2 were over 10 yards. So he was a possession guy. He was consistent. Charleston Rambo is an average at best possession receiver. He was 2 for 2 in the middle of the field and 0 for 3 outside the hashes. He was only thrown to on the right side of the field, by the way. He's not a big-time player. Mims was 4 for 4, only had 1 opportunity downfield and hit it for 30 yards. If Oklahoma wants to win more games, they need to feature Marvin Mims and not Charleston Rambo. I'm just telling you. The other player I really like, though, is their tight end, Jeremiah Hall. He was the only other player to hit a downfield throw. Imagine that. The 2 players I said in the preview show that they should focus on were the only 2 to hit throws down the field. Marvin Mims and Jeremiah Hall. How about that? Pass pro was abysmal for the Longhorns. 23 quarterback pressures. Their right tackle, Christian Jones, was getting beat like a drum by the DN Isaiah Thomas for Oklahoma. 8 quarterback pressures allowed, almost triple any other player on the team. And then Nick Benito, another South Florida product, was the other dominant force wreaking havoc on Sam Ellinger. He had 7 quarterback pressures and 2 sacks. All in all, I mean, that's a bad day. 23 QB pressures. Oklahoma had 16 QB pressures. Oh, it was a tough day for the offenses, that's for sure. And then the defensive side of the ball was interesting. Chris Ash versus Alex Grinch. Buckeye revered resurrector that led to the national championship versus the scapegoated villain who took the blame for Greg Schiano. How about this for you? Who's going to win, Ash or Grinch? Oklahoma, 4 missed tackles on the game. Texas, 16 missed tackles. I mean, I guess I could have skipped all this analysis and just said that, and that would have been it. Like, oh, that's why they won. Last week's not top player of the week, the Crisco-laden, out-of-service tackling machine, DeMarvion Overshown, who leads the country in missed tackles, had 4 more missed tackles on Saturday. The kid misses tackles like it's going out of style. Like he does it like he enjoys it. The other thing that happened is Texas' secondary got scorched. 21 of, this is just against the secondary, 21 of 25 targets, 84% completion percentage, 165 yards, and 2 TDs. So break out those real DBU shirts. It's not going well for Chris Ash. I already mentioned Oklahoma secondary player of the game on defense for me was Jaden Davis. He was phenomenal. The other thing that happened is field position tells us a lot. Oklahoma's 4 touchdowns in regulation started on their 40-yard line, on the Texas's 5, Texas's 30, and then their 13-yard line. They had 1 long drive to score. That's it. That's why field position is so important. I was looking at it since 2010. I saw this. Since 2010, right? In the last 10 years, Texas is 2-7 against TCU, 3-9 against Oklahoma, 3-7 against Oklahoma State, 4-4 against West Virginia, 5-5 against Baylor, 5-5 against Kansas State. They don't have a winning record against any of those teams. They're also 5-12 versus Power 5 non-conference opponents, excluding bowl games. 2-11 since 2013. It's not going well in Longhorn Nation, and I feel for you. I really do. But I think obviously people were going to anticipate that I would say it's time for Tom Herman to go. But when you look at the way things are going specifically on offense and then in its entirety with recruiting classes not being developed, guys aren't going to the NFL, it is time to move on from Tom Herman. And if I'm a Longhorn, I'm saying it loud and proud, and I am making sure everybody knows it. Well, I said this is going to be a long one, and I did not disappoint. We still, for the subscribers, we still have to go through the Georgia and Tennessee game and the Miami-Clemson game. So still a ton more to talk about on what we learned this weekend in college football. But I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you for tuning in. As I always say, I appreciate your support. If you could help us make this grow, tweet about the show, tweet about what you learned, or even just mention to a couple buddies, a couple friends that they should check out the podcast. I appreciate it. Also, check out menacetosports.com. Ace on Lane, Game Day Watch, hang out with me and Braxton and a handful of other people. And let's get back to some normalcy, some Buckeye football, and watch the game, man. Tickets are on sale right now. Check it out. We're going to be there, and we're going to do it for the first game, maybe probably all the home games, but definitely the first and definitely the rivalry game. So check it out on there. I appreciate you listening. Hope you were entertained. Hope you were educated. Hope you learned something, took something away from the show. And if you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40,
45, 50, 45.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.